Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind.
Linda Simmons, Clem Mason, and Daniel Clark. Three civilians who are captured by aliens using a hypnotic signal and imbued with superhuman powers. How does this relate to the Supreme Headquarters for the Alien Defense Organization of Earth? We'll find out in the latest Resonance Rewind. It looks like Miss Simmons is it. She must be considered highly dangerous. I have to say, could well be the case. Victoria Simmons, no relation to Linda Simmons, of course, one of the main key protagonists in this latest exploration of a classic text, directed by Jeremy Summers, of course, written by Jerry and Sylvia Anderson. And of course, the Psycho Bombs episode of UFO. So just clarifying that, no relation to this particular Linda Simmons back in the 1980s.
I've never had a look, but I don't think so.
Okay, well, let's make a start, because clearly, as we said in the brief description of the whole thing, a trio of innocent civilians, Linda Simmons, Clem Mason, Daniel Clark, of course, captured by aliens, using that hypnotic signal and imbued with superhuman powers, becoming, in the words of Dr. Jackson, a psycho bomb. Presumably your first experience of the Jerry Anderson UFO television series.
Yes, obviously it's not the first Jerry Anderson that we're familiar with, but yeah, it's the first time I've actually seen him work with humans, more or less.
And again, having seen that particular scenario, I mean, we have here a mid-season show in many ways. I mean, it only lasted for one season. It's episode 12 in terms of its lineup. We also see the character Mike Pratt there, who would actually go on to great fame as Randall and Hopkirk, deceased, of course. Jeff Randall in there. We mentioned last week David Collings, of course, much beloved actor who also was a traditional line, who played Daniel Clark. How did it pan out? What are your thoughts on the whole episode?
Well, I remember talking to you about this yesterday, and you did say that one of the comments on IMDb was about it being slightly wooden. So I was waiting definitely for everything that you said, and you were so right. Some wooden puppets. It all sort of came to mind when I was watching it. Like, yeah, that's a very good description.
I mean, looking at it now, and clearly UFO has got its fans, it's got its detractors. I was looking at some of the reviews that are actually available actually on YouTube to actually talk about how the whole process was developed, etc. And I think you have lots of very interesting characters here. I mean, Ed Bishop, a very driven Commander Straker. We know, again, we've looked in previous episodes of Resonance Rewind at episodes such as Confetti Check A-OK, which again shows how he's so driven. His marriage goes down the tubes and has all ch manner of challenges to that. Dr. Jackson, of course, Vladek Shabal, I'd like to say a friend of mine back in the day, a very key classic example of Eastern European actor, of course, as Dr. Jackson. I mean, I think in a sense, I've again, although I say the critics at the time, and this wasn't actually on IMDb, but there were moments who said, yeah, Gerry Anderson used to work with puppets and now he's working with actors, but the puppets were better emoters. So again, I think it's interesting. And of course, let's be honest, Ed Bishop as Commander Straker was the voice of Captain Blue in Star Trek. Jessica Burtis, your own thoughts on this, because you've seen you've shared other episodes of UFO before. You've had a look at this thing. You're familiar with the Supreme Headquarters Alien Defense Organization underneath the Straker Film Studios, the Harlington Straker Film Studios, and so on. What did you make of this particular adventure?
So I think anytime I watch alien shows, aliens just freak me out, I've realized. I think they're one of the things I find creepiest. So this show is always eerie to me. And I think the kind of more muted colors and the kind of grainy film from the 70s just kind of add to that whole creepiness. But I think the idea of alien mind control is something that is very present in a lot of sci-fi. The idea of something taking away your own thoughts and using your body as kind of like a little mechanism is something that's a pretty common theme. So it's interesting seeing UFOs take on it and seeing it through aliens kind of controlling people.
Quite literally
Almost like
being
AI. Right?
quite literally being possessed in so many ways. And you said, Victoria, about AI and artificial intelligence, but obviously in this particular case the intelligence is the alien side of things there. And we see a kind of step-by-step shift in terms of the anxiety as it's ramped up. We don't see any opening titles. It's one of, I think, only two of the 26 episodes that don't actually have the opening credit scene, which was very famous within UFO. But we do see those three apparently disconnected individuals, the bank clerk, Daniel Clark, the presumably building operative or surveyor, played by Mike Pratt, and of course the secretary, Miss Simmons, of course, played by Deborah Grant. And they've clearly been possessed. I want to know what happened to the dog. Hopefully the dog survived, because actually there's a fairly brutal connection in which not only did all of the three human beings not make it through to the end, but also even Miss Simmons' boss, he obviously sort of didn't make it either. Plus, of course, we have the other guest star, Tom Adams, who played Captain Lauritsen, who not only did he have his fingerprints removed, but he was also effectively crushed as well from that point of view. So, if we add to that the disaster of Skydiver 3, I mean, this could be, a huge, almost a slaughter of shadow operatives and more. I mean, and Ed Straker himself, lucky to survive, arguably, in terms of when he effectively survived the end sequence, and of course that initial encounter with Mr. Clark. I mean, did you think it was too brutal? Because at the time, Jessica, I think this actually was one of those late night screenings where they could really only show it at around about 11 o'clock, because obviously it was quite a shift. Although the explosions were there, and although the music by Barry Gray was there, and so on, you did have quite a shift in terms of this real life sinister aspect, which you've already referred to.
Yeah, it is pretty dark. The fact that none of them survived is really, I feel like a lot of the shows from the 70s, like, it can get a little, like, people can die in the episodes, but it's never really, like, as dark, I feel like, as this one. It was a little hopeless because all the poor people involved, I expected Shadow to save them, but that didn't happen. Although these humans were, like, exceptionally fashionable humans. So it would have been cool to see more outfits, but we can't anymore. But yeah, it's very disturbing. I don't know why they might have chosen to get rid of all of the humans, but I don't know, maybe it just shows the threat that the aliens pose, that, even Shadow can't really stop all of them.
I mean, looking at the development, and you mentioned the fashion, so let's talk about that because Sylvia Anderson, Jerry's wife at the time, was very noted for her keen fashion style. Whether it's red dresses, boots, any kind of scenarios from that perspective. I mean, clearly Deborah Grant had a whole range of changes there. But let's not forget again something which I thought was most curious, that when Daniel Clark, the character of Daniel Clark, actually is captured by the Fairfield security guards, he gets a complete change of clothes as well. Because I mean, he's clearly been X-rayed, but they don't give him his clothes back, and he comes out wearing a kind of karate judo suit, basically, from that point of view. So clearly, clothes, high budget from this. Jessica, anything which you thought, yeah, I think I'd go with that.
I mean, the red dress is such an incredible piece. It's just so, like, cool. I feel like the 70s was such an interesting period in fashion, and seeing kind of British fashion during time period is always one of the best parts of watching shows from that era. So I do think the red dress was my absolute favorite. Again, I feel like there's quite a lot of, like, more muted color palettes in the shows, which work really well with the eerie ambiance of aliens, and kind of the similarities between the mind control, but the red dress just stands out, of course.
And what about the audio text of Barry Gray and his whirring UFO sounds and all of the other electronica that he was actually bringing to bear? I mean, Victoria, did you think that was effective? Did it kind of add to the suspense of the 48 minutes or so of the show?
Effective, probably not, but I can see what they were trying to do because and Doctor Who obviously has that whirring, that very prominent whirring sound with the TARDIS and other things. So maybe they were trying to imitate something along those lines. I don't know, but I don't think it came off quite as well as it could have done.
We forgot, of course, the police officer who is the first victim of Miss Simmons, simply because he actually pulled her over. And then, of course, not a good idea to actually then take off in your car and look to escape, as he said, starting off by saying that's a very silly way to park, Miss. And then, obviously, the next challenge was problematic as well from that point of view. I love the line, "I find most Americans are very mechanically minded." Which I suppose shows the British ineptitude at its best when Daniel Clark sort of finds out that, oh, you're an American, as you're from Boston, to be precise, that side of things. I mean, Jessica, is this a kind of thing that we missed out? Actually, all Americans are very mechanically minded, or is that just a borderline stereotype?
Yeah, I think it'd just be, there's too many regions. There's just maybe, I don't know, New Yorkers, they're always very focused. They always know what they're doing. But I think it is kind of funny watching older shows, even shows now, and kind of like the little ribbing that happens between, like, British and American characters. I think it's kind of cute. I don't know.
We have arguably three very strong female characters in this in different ways. Obviously, we have Colonel Lake, played by Vonda Ventum, probably best known these days for being the mother of Benedict Cumberbatch. But in terms of her particular take, I mean, that opening sequence where we get Ed Bishop as Commander Straker saying, "Is Colonel Lake are actually around? Just spread it around. I'm on my way in, will you? I find it helps efficiency." So, I mean, you've clearly got an operation here whereby if the chief executive is coming in, he wants to make sure that's sorted through. But what about that scene effectively where, well, arguably it starts with Colonel Virginia Lake Shocked basically by saying he's doing what? He's bringing her in. And then of course we have Room 22 and the sequence where Colonel Lake effectively interrogates Simmons to the point that she basically has to crouch down on her knees and breaks down in tears, glycerin admittedly, but tears were there. Any thoughts from yourself, Victoria?
Oh me, I was you and Jessica. No, I thought that the storyline wasn't quite pushed as much as it could have been. It kind of held back. I know we sort of talked about it being quite dark on some of the parts, but it was sort of ended up being between the sci-fi and thriller genre, and I say, if you're going to go for one, just go for it.
Well, let's move on to the women, because I did say three leading characters. Well, obviously, Deborah Grant as Linda Simmons, Wanda Ventum as Colonel Virginia Lake, and I think Aisha Brough, of course, who has the first words in the episode as Shadow Operative Aisha, of course, from that perspective. I mean, how did you feel that the genders were represented? Because unlike previous episodes that we've looked at, where we had the character of Alec Freeman, played by George Sewell, with some arguably very cringeworthy comments and attempts at flirtation. By now, we'd actually replaced or substituted in Colonel Paul Foster as Michael Billington. There is, of course, that somewhat cheesy and slow motion action sequence where obviously Colonel Foster is on a lunch date with Simmons. And well, you can tell it's very borderline romantic because it goes into slow-mo for a time, basically, with Linda Simmons and so on. But how did you feel the genders were portrayed, Jessica?
I mean, I think anytime we watch shows from like the 60s, 70s, it can kind of be a toss-up. But we do watch a lot of shows that do have very strong characters who are women. And I think, I mean, I don't really view like a murderous alien as like a very good representation. But I think having women who are so involved in the plot and in moving the plot is a big indicator of that. Not necessarily just like the moral qualities of them, but women who are involved in kind of moving the plot forward instead of just kind of ornaments added on. And I think that this show is always interesting, in at least from what I remember from the other episodes too, and how it portrays women, because I think it's not negative. But I think like Victoria was saying, there was room for the plot to kind of improve. I think it could be a bit, you kind of figure out what's going to happen. There were like stages to it. So I think that I mean, I don't think that's an indicator in how the women are represented, but a more complex plot with these characters would have been interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think it would probably pass the Bechdel test, unless I'm way off base with respect to that, which again sometimes is used as a signifier from that perspective. Okay, what about general characters then, Victoria? Anybody that stood out to yourself, or is it a case of, well, it's got to be the little dog? Hopefully, the little dog run by the building contractor and the builder, etc. He may have survived. We don't know. He may have survived.
Well, there's one guy that this one of the security guards who, even though he passes all the tests, still sums him up as being a security hazard. He's got to have some sort of mention because, he's one of the only ones that's actually truly figured it out. Maybe not that it's aliens, but he's sussed that something's wrong. And of course, Simmons, I mean, how can I not?
Well, again, as we said at the start, as far as we're aware, no connection between the character Linda Simmons and the singer-songwriter Victoria Simmons. One is in real life, or our version of reality. The other one is obviously in the version of reality where Earth was going head to head with potential alien invaders back in the year 1980. But who knows? Jessica, from your own perspective, anybody stand out as worth a men or indeed any honorable mentions? I mean, I think Ladakh Shabal's Doug Jackson scenario, in which he actually alludes to the very real science that we are comprise the things that we're doing now is electrical signals and impulses. Could that actually become so disturbed, so violently out of place that we could literally explode with superhuman strength, when possessed by another form? Anyway, goes away from the actual favorite characters. Jessica, which one or ones stood out?
I mean, I think Saker, is it Saker? Is it Saker?
Straker.
Striker, thank you. I'm
Ed
so bad with character
Straker.
names. But I think Striker is one of my favorites. But I think, I mean, can the red dress be its own character? I don't know. It's just so just like visually beautiful. The costuming department did wonderful. So yeah, maybe it's the alien who is Simmons. I don't know, because I'm maybe if we'd seen like more of their human side before, I could say the human, but I guess it's the aliens in them that are the character.
Well, of course, Linda Simmons' boss, simply known as the executive, played by Alexander Davion, arguably is quite sympathetic. He actually says, "Is everything all right?" You know, that he wasn't expecting it back in, and of course, he ends up being killed as well from that line. So clearly, you've got problems with respect to that issue. So yeah, I mean, Ed Straker there and the red dress. Okay, I think we know where we're going with respect to that. No mention this time around, Jessica, for the interesting choice in a submarine, i.e., Skydiver 3, of string vests.
Sorry, the connection got a little fuzzy. Can you say that one more time?
The,
Sorry,
the,
Zoom problems.
the, the, the costumes of string vests in Skydiver 3. I mean, obviously, you could always tell which sort of area are you on the ground? Are you actually in space? Are you in a submarine? If you're in a submarine, clearly string vests are very much in
Course.
vogue.
Of course, what else would you wear? Can't think of anything else.
Victoria, any other comments you'd like to make about the way the whole thing developed and indeed the aspects that were there? I mean, it's been argued that actually one of the characteristics of Ed Straker, as played by Ed Bishop, was unemotional, isolated, and that was part of his appeal in many ways. I mean, it's interesting that Big Finish Productions have started doing a reimagining of UFO in audio form, and it's proving to be very successful in terms of how that's developing, and they take through the process of how it's working. So, Victoria, any thoughts about either the additional characters or whether you'd like to see more of this particular series and format?
Well, it would be interesting to see how it other ones compare to it, but I do think one thing they could have done was make the actual humans a little bit different. I found maybe they were a bit too similar to the human that had been taken over by the alien. So you, like we were saying, just see a little bit of more of their background and their character as a human, and then changing to the alien human. But even the other characters could have had a little bit more of a difference between the two.
There's a kind of every person system that comes through. I mean, Daniel Clark is a bank clerk. He's 44. He has a family. They're portrayed very much as apparently normal individuals who have clearly had this, whether it be alien abduction or whether it be possession based via the UFO that's actually there. And of course, that ultimatum that Straker is actually given, which leads him to actually say that he knew a police captain once. He got 100 crank letters a week. The one he ignored was the one that killed him. So clearly, again, there are areas within that that suggest that when you get threats, when you get those particular aspects, it is problematic. And again, even Simmons herself doesn't quite make it at the end. And it's only because the UFO is actually destroyed and therefore effectively stops the over control that we have that final sequence where the shadow itself doesn't actually explode and the series come to a premature end. Jessica, any other comments you'd like to make before we start looking at the scores?
Well, I think it's really interesting that you mentioned audio over radio, since that kind of reminds me of War of the Worlds and how the kind of original broadcast of it sent so many people into a panic over the airwaves. So I think that's really interesting. Sci-fi translates, I think, very well over the radio. more than other genres tend to. So it'd be really cool to listen to this show as an audio-based one because I do think it works. I do think this show could work very well as an audio because I don't think it's so dependent on visuals as something like Star Trek is, where I feel like in Star Trek the visuals are extremely important to the plot. Whereas I think in this it could translate very well. So that's really interesting to think about.
Well, again, the company Big Finish, Nicholas Briggs, of course, so when he's not being the voice of Cybermen, Daleks, and various other bits and pieces, is the main one of the prime movers behind this, as indeed is Jamie Anderson, as you might expect. Jamie Anderson, the son of Gerry Anderson, who's developed both audio versions of both UFO and Space 1999 and so on, with a completely different cast, and have actually reworked the character of Ed Straker. So effectively, we see some of the reasons and some of the rationale in terms of how he becomes head of Shadow and so on. But the main characters that we see, General Henderson, actually are in place there. Okay, we're not here to review Big Finish audio productions at that stage, of course, nice though they might be and peripheral to the whole piece. Victoria, would you like to give a score out of 10 for the Psycho Bombs?
going to go 5, but I might give it a 6.
So it didn't bomb out completely then, and
No, I
it
didn't, but I just felt they really could have done more with it.
okay.
But the music, I will say, went along with what they had.
Barry Gray, of course. And Jessica.
I think I would give it a 7 based on how I think it is kind of a very well encapsulated episode. The arc finishes. It doesn't really leave a ton that I feel like was meant to be tied up. I think it does it well. I would have liked a bit more complexity in the plot, but I think for something that was like would have been watched every week, I think that that's more understandable. And I think given the context, since I have watched a couple other episodes from the series, and I did really like them, even if aliens freak me out, I think that just adds to it. So I think I would actually give this an 8. Victoria, if you haven't watched episodes, I do recommend the series because I have enjoyed the other episodes that we've watched, and they've been very good.
For a moment, I thought the alien possession was actually stopping or hindering the interconnection from that side of things. But thankfully, no, we're okay. We're good as far as that's concerned.
You just tell them that's how you do it.
I think I'll probably go for an 8 as well, Jessica. I mean, it's far from an absolutely perfect scenario, but I do think reviewed again, seen again, and repeated viewings does actually help lift. The narrative around, I think you see the way in which the whole thing comes together. Not the best example, but at least again one in which I feel that you did had a good strong balance and no real major stereotypes of the time, which is what often we find in shows that are 1969, 1970, etc. I think from that basis it was fairly solid. But we move back to the 21st century in a big way for the next particular episode. And actually, Victoria, we offer this to Pamela Sue Mann, actually. Which one of your pieces of music would you like us to actually feature as a kind of tribute to the UFO episode Psycho Bombs?
Now you just sort of go through all the songs and go, I don't know what I've written.
I was thinking maybe Touch the Stars could be a useful one, but
Oh,
there we are.
it could be, yeah.
As it seemed to go
We'll go
down
with
very well in a open mic night in London recently, I think Touch the Stars probably could be one of those things that could be usefully
I was
put.
the only one that actually put dance moves into my performance.
Built like Adonis,
just the muscle and bone. He comes for me to find lady, like the one in the diamonds and fur. I make himself indispensable to her. And he says, I don't wanna touch the stars. Said I just wanna stand in that light. I don't wanna touch the stars. Just wanna get with somebody who might. You gotta know your limitations to keep you ahead in the fight. So I don't wanna touch the stars. Not tonight.
Proving that you weren't possessed by aliens, which is very good.
Oh, maybe I was.
And had that superhuman strength. As mentioned, next up on Resonance Rewind, everything is awesome because we have the Master Builder, we have the Lego Movie that launched a whole range of things together as we explore the Lego Movie and actually ask that question, is it as awesome as we think it actually happens to be? And what does it say for our particular lifetimes that we're working through that. For the moment, before we head into Touch the Stars with Victoria Simmons, and of course the very bleak ending of UFO, because even the end credits I find from Barry Gray, where we see the slow pan out past the moon to the planets, etc. It's hardly a kind of upbeat number. I did hear it described once as a sort of final thing is, this is almost the equivalent to a 1970s edition of Game of Thrones. I don't think it's quite as sort of weird as that, but you know that's another line which again was talked about. At least Ed Straker, as far as I'm aware, still is there. But as mentioned, to Victoria Simmons, to Jessica Burtis, huge thanks indeed. And of course, the end line is as ever, keep on resonating. Thank you.
Okay, and we're rolling, and action. Just go ahead when you're ready.
Sorry, I wasn't listening. I've just been Batmailing on my bat phone.
Yeah, can you just do the line, please?
I am Batman.
No, the other line?
Oh, right. I'm supposed to say some baloney about how you shouldn't click that skip button.
Yeah, the sooner you do that, the sooner we can show people the trailer for the Lego movie.
Fine. Crank up those subwoofers, dude, and check this out.
Good morning, apartment. Ready to start the day.
Jumping jacks, hit them. One, two, three. I am so pumped up! Yes! Overpriced coffee.
That's $37.
Awesome!
Everything is awesome.
Oh my gosh, I love this song.
It's cool if we're part of the team. Everything is awesome.
No, guys, wait up! Where am I?
Come with me if you want to not die.
What is happening?
You're the special. And the prophecy states that you're the most important person in the universe. That's you, right?
Yes. That's me.
Relax, everybody. I'm here.
Batman? Awesome!
Who are you here to see?
I'm here to see your butt.
Oh my gosh.
Pow. Wham. First try.
My fellow master builders,
hello.
Lord Business plans to end the world as we know it. There is yet one hope. The special has arisen.
I know what you're thinking. He is the least qualified person to lead us. And you are right.
A house divided against itself would be better than this.
Abraham Lincoln!
I'm not the special.
I'm just a regular, normal guy.
You have the ability to be the special because I believe in you.
Destroy him!
Aloha, loser!
We'll wing it. It's a bat pun.
Take him to the melding chamber.
Isn't there supposed to also be a good cop?
Hi, buddy. Would you like a glass of water?
Yeah, actually.
Too bad. We are entering your mind.
What?
I don't think he's ever had an original thought.
That's not true. Introducing the double-decker couch. So everyone could watch TV together and be buddies.
That is literally the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Let me handle this. That idea is just the worst.
To the Batmobile! Dang it.
To the invisible jet! Dang it.